As we have seen, Blendon's will was read shortly after his funeral while his family members were still present and could listen to its terms, and they weren't surprised when they learned that they were to receive very little in the way of money and nothing in the way of any kind of control or interest in the paper company itself. It's what they had expected. The will continued, after dealing with the family section, to stipulate that each employee of at least 1 year's duration would receive $25. That was kind of a nice little Blendon touch, just a little remembrance from him to each of those employees. And then came the provisions for disposing of the bulk of the multi-million dollar estate. Blendon made clear in the will that he desired to perpetuate, as far as maybe reasonably possible, the existence of the Blendon Paper Company for the benefit of the inhabitants of the community in which its mill is situated. And that, of course, is what Blendon had said all along, very consistent in that. The company itself would be his main legacy to Grand Rapids, with its employment and all the other major factors that it had to offer Grand Rapids. That struck him as far more important than anything else that he could do. But he also included that he was going to ensure funding for the foundation and that they would be looked after as well. To accomplish these ends, most of the estate was placed in the care of the Northwestern Bank of Minneapolis, represented by its vice president, Samuel Rogers, and by William Oppenheimer, with the two men serving as trustees. The trustees assumed control of the stock of the paper company that had all been owned by Blendon and elected a board of directors who in turn appointed the officers. The income from Blendon's investments, the diversified holdings of the Blendon Development Company, went directly to the foundation, as did profits not needed for reinvestment in the mill. The trustees vowed that Blendon's goals would be the guiding post for those who follow him. 3 days after Blendon's death, the trustees and the members of the board of directors of the paper company met. In a statement released to mill employees, the board assured them that there will be no change in the policies or active management of the company. Daily operation will continue unchanged. Miles Reif was appointed a member of the board of directors. Samuel Rogers was named chairman of the board, and William Oppenheimer took Blendon's place as president of the company. So, yeah, Blendon is looking to keep it going just as it was, and that hopefully would last long into the future. But in one matter, the board and company officials did not acquiesce to Charles Blendon's wishes. They quickly reinstated C.K. Andrews as a vice president and director to serve in an advisory capacity, making available to the company officials his knowledge of the company's affairs that he had acquired during his long years as the company's executive vice president and general manager. That was so necessary. Remember how badly Blendon had treated him, having become convinced in his mind, and nobody could shake him of it, that Andrews had betrayed him. So, yes, that matter indeed was redressed. Well, the provisions of Blendon's will summed up his life's accomplishment. He had set out to use his considerable resources to build and promote what he thought of as a progressive spirit in his adopted community. And through the terms of his will, he attempted to perpetuate that goal. In the issue of the Grand Rapids Herald Review carrying the news of his death, appropriate tribute was paid to Blendon and his aspirations. An editorial titled, "His Vision Will Live On," stated, "Words cannot adequately express what Mr. Blendon has contributed to this community. But in the future, as in the past, his works will speak for themselves. The vision of a wise man will live on to encourage the development of a community to which Mr. Blendon gave not only his wealth, but also his energy and ability." Quarter of a century later, Charles Blendon's grandson, Bruce, summarized the essence of his grandfather's long life and career. In a backwards glance, I like to see him in the role he created for himself as the eternal benefactor of Grand Rapids. That was really the crux of his life. The accomplishments of the newspapers or the mill were just links in the chain that allowed him to be the benefactor of Grand Rapids. The decades following the death of Blandon witnessed a new era of development and vast expansion for both the Blandon Paper Company and the Blandon Foundation. The talented and ambitious executives and technical staff who had been carefully chosen by Blandon in the 1940s and 50s ensured the continued efficient operation of the Blandon Paper Company and constituted an important part of Charles Blandon's legacy. These men had sometimes been restrained and frustrated by Blandon during his last years, but after his death they stood ready to implement far-reaching plans. They were determined to carry on the Blandon tradition of quality production and progressiveness. The company of the 1960s and 70s was given direction by its earlier accomplishment in developing the technology of the trailing blade coater. Not only had that successful research revolutionized the paper coating industry, it had also left the Blandon management determined to capitalize on the prestige and reputation that it had brought to the mill. Customers knew the Blandon name and wanted to use the company's quality groundwood coated sheet for their magazines. To meet that demand, the company would have to expand. Plans were made to coat all of the publication paper produced in Grand Rapids. Calling on the experience gained from working with the number one coater, the mill technical staff installed a second, more efficient trailing blade coater. Operating at speeds of up to 2,600 feet per minute, the number two coater soon obtained what the company claimed were efficiencies higher than any on-machine coaters in the industry. Boasting more experience with blade coating than any other mill in the world, the Blandon Paper Company continued research, seeking new and better coating formulas to ensure a consistently bright and smooth printing surface. A new quality control department, soon with a staff nearing 30 people, strived to maintain and upgrade the quality of the Blandon paper, so more emphasis than ever on maintaining its reputation for quality. Backed by the trustees of the estate, Miles Reif, with full confidence in the future of Blandon coated paper, prepared plans to expand the physical plant and production capacity of the mill. Taking advantage of the company's sound financial condition and the arrangements whereby profits were available for expansion rather than stock dividends, the company allocated $13 million for the project. 30 years after the installation of the number three machine, the Beloit Corporation of Wisconsin again designed a Ford Rainier to meet the specific needs of the Blandon Paper Company. The number four machine was expected to almost double the production capacity of the mill. A new and faster trailing blade coater and two new super calendars were installed. Spacious office quarters had already been constructed where the villa once stood, and to accommodate the new machinery and increased paper production, the mill plant was considerably enlarged. By the end of the decade, the number three machine had been rebuilt, and to augment coating procedures, a clay handling and processing plant had also been constructed. Still more space was added to the mill. Employees numbered 844, and paper production was up to 188,000 tons per year. So, boy, this place is really expanding at this time. The 1970s saw even more impressive gains in the Blandon litany of improving, expanding, raising production, and adding employees. The initial work with the trailing blade coater continued to influence the development of the company. Management took no chance of losing customers who, in greater numbers than ever, desired coated Blandon paper. Accordingly, The largest sum so far was invested in the mill. A $45 million program of expansion was approved by the estate trustees and the management. How utterly amazed the original incorporators, who had managed to scrape together $200,000 to build the mill, would have been at the thought of such a figure. The new number 5 machine was built by the ever-reliable Beloit Corporation. Demand for blend and paper remained strong, and contract buyers awaited delivery even before the sheet was made. After the installation of the number 5 machine, the Blend and Paper Company became the third largest producer of the type of publication paper in which it specialized. In 1978, sales reached $115 million, and the company employed about 1,200 people. Wow, this expansion is just really, really something and humming along. The mill's reputation for progressiveness was maintained after the death of Blandin. Major research led to new technologies in the coated paper industry. And in 1955, the Paper Trade Journal devoted considerable attention to what it described as a new and revolutionary method of producing groundwood pulp. So, yes, matters are really bustling, and it would seem that Charles Blandin has achieved his goal. The paper company is doing more than it ever had done in Grand Rapids. And this is a setting for the absolutely astonishing headline in the July 14th, 1977, Herald Review. It proclaimed, "Reach agreement on sale of the paper company." And the accompanying story explained, "The trustees of the Charles K. Blandin Residuary Trust and British Columbia Forest Products announced that they have reached agreement for the sale of the Blandin Paper Company." My, that was totally unexpected, except a few who were in the know of what was coming. What had happened was that there were new tax laws and decisions by the Internal Revenue Service that forced the trustees of the estate to end the independent ownership of the Blandin Paper Company. They first had considered the public sale of paper company stock that had been held so long by Blandin. After ruling out that possibility, the trustees evaluated the proposals of companies interested in purchasing the mill and accepted the $80 million high offer of British Columbia Forest Products. Well, not only has the mill been sold, our mill, as it's always referred to in Grand Rapids, is now being controlled by a Canadian firm. And we have analyzed at great length the sense of bitterness between American paper producers and the Canadian paper producers because they had managed to get all of those permits to send their stuff without tariffs and had been in major competition with the Americans. So here the situation of the mill has changed so completely and totally. What we're seeing here is the first stages of globalization influencing Grand Rapids, and it's going to continue certainly very strongly. It would seem then, just when it looked like everything that Blandin had wanted to achieve for the company was going so well, here it's all come to naught. But what we have to keep in mind is a major change which is taking place here. The Blandin Foundation has been doing very well upon receiving those monies from Blandin's development company. Profits from Blandin's holding, other than the paper company, had flowed to it since his death, and its assets have reached $20 million as the mill was sold. And where will the $80 million from that sale go? Yes, to the foundation. Suddenly, Grand Rapids is unique in the whole country. Nowhere else in a town so small as Grand Rapids is there a foundation with such assets. That foundation is now the fourth largest in the state of Minnesota. The sale of the mill does not signify the end of Charles Blandin's desire to continue to support the interests of the town. It just places them in a different venue. The Blandin Foundation is in the process of separating from the paper company and has become an entity unto itself. Its trustees remain loyal to Blandin's philosophy when it comes to the art of giving money away, and now it has the economic power to take on major projects, including buildings, the YMCA and the Miles Rife Performing Arts Center are two examples of that, as well as a great deal else. CK's support of his town will indeed continue on. Well, more next time as globalization continues and the mill is sold to a New Zealand firm. Our mill in Grand Rapids is now being controlled from New Zealand. Next time, we'll look at more.